Welcome to Community Alert. Not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster with Ted Adams and Mike Williams, keeping you informed on how to get ready and be prepared. Tuesdays at 11 a.m. and 9 p.m. and Saturdays at 1 p.m. on AM 1290, the Santa Barbara News Press radio station.
Hey folks, welcome to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams, my co-host is Mike Williams, and today we're visiting with Bill Booth, who's the president of Interact Business Group, and they are involved with a consulting firm. And
Public Safety Consulting.
Yep. And Mike, go ahead with your...
We've got a few announcements here. First of all, from Santa Barbara County Fire Department, actually it's from all the fire departments as well as the fire service. Santa Barbara County average fuel moisture rating right now is at 62%, some areas below critical. We are not out of fire season. Do not let the current weather mislead you. This stuff up here on the side of the hill is definitely ready to burn.
Yeah, so we haven't had enough rain to do any good at all.
So just because it's cool outside doesn't mean we don't have a problem. So moving forward, from public service announcements from the Santa Barbara County Air Pollution Control District and Santa Barbara County Fire, tips for cleaning a fireplace, burning, and safer homes. Now's the time to have somebody come in and inspect your chimney and clean it out if necessary. Professional chimney sweeps available in the Yellow Pages. For further information, visit www.rair.org. That's rour.org or sbcfire.com. Time to get the flu shot again. Further information on flu shots available at vaccine.helpmap.org, vaccine.helpmap.org, or give the Public Health Department a call, 681-5102, 681-5102. And finally, this just from the Santa Barbara County Fire Department, spot strokes fast. Fast meaning face drooping, arm weakness, speech difficulty, and time to call 911. And they have a program putting together right now that will be coming out in tomorrow's paper, I presume, about what FAST and their stroke program is. And my brother's had two massive strokes, and I can't emphasize enough the importance of getting the victim to the hospital as rapidly as possible.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, so Bill.
Bill, welcome to the show.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Could you tell us a little bit about just what it is your group does? And I know you've been doing it for some time, and it's an integral part of the system. And maybe you'd give us a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, Interact Business Group was started in late 1992, and almost 20 years now. And we are a national consulting firm. And our specialty, and it's a very, very specialized niche, is that we write strategic business plans for public safety. And our specific area of expertise is in the area of training, training facilities, training planning. What does it cost to operate training centers? What do they cost to build? What do they cost to operate? How do you fund them? How do you staff them? Justification for why in the heck you need to train so much and all that sort of stuff. And, that's what we do. We've been at it for a long time, and we do it nationally, state, federal, local, and all agencies of all sizes.
Well, I should point out that we hired Bill to be the consultant for Fire Services Training Institute in 2005, and he helped write the business plan for the Fire Services Training Institute, which, ironically, we've pretty much completed. We've done everything we set out to do, which is somewhat unusual to actually execute.
So you're disbanding then?
No, we're not disbanding. We're starting a new business plan. We're moving on to the next chapter. But, you know, having a plan is critical in taking on a lot of these projects, and it's interesting how few organizations actually want to sit down and do a real plan. How frustrating is that to you, Bill?
You know, it really is, because, you know, in the world of public safety, you know, there's a lot of folks that are retiring, transitioning in and out of positions within the departments. There's a lot of turnover. I can say maybe not new employees like you'd find in the private sector, but transferring in and out of departments, lateral promotions, that sort of thing, upward promotions, moving around. And boy, a good solid strategic plan like the one you have, Mike, at FSTI, it really is a roadmap. You always can fall back on it, say, where the heck are we going? What are we doing? You can fall back on it.
Well, I wrote a recent article about waste versus necessity, or waste or necessity, and several of the issues that they bring out in that, and this was the finance officer's survey, all centers around lack of strategic planning, lack of a financial plan, lack of understanding what it is we're trying to do, what the ultimate goal is, documentation that the goal has actually been met, verification that something's actually occurred. It kind of goes to Howard Phillips' book. It's all about the process. And it's not about the conclusion. And so that's why I wanted to have Bill jump on board with us today, because this is becoming more and more of a hot topic within the world of public safety as people become under the spotlight and their scrutiny, as well as major changes happening primarily in the fire service that are going to have to change the way people think and do business.
And distribution of funds.
Distribution of funds, distribution of services, increase in services. So what changes, Bill, have you seen in funding attitudes towards public safety, say, in the last decade or perhaps more importantly, just in the last couple of years?
Sure. You know, everything changed on 9/11. You know, it is the mark by which all things are judged, I think, in public safety. Pre-9/11, post-9/11, over 10 years ago now, it is still the marker that everybody judges everything from. And everything changed on 9/11. And with that changed the public safety and public safety facilities and funding and training and intercommunication, interoperability. You know, one of the big issues out of 9/11 in New York was none of the departments could talk to each other. The radios didn't talk to each other. A lot of money has been spent on correcting a lot of those issues. And, you know, to the credit, a lot of that has been worked on. It still continues. And now in 2008, you know, we get hit with this recession. And, boy, another shot with regards to a tide change in public safety and you know, the money just is not there. The tax dollars, the land values have gone down. Tax dollars are not there. Departments have had to readjust once again to the changing tides of economic tide here.
Where are you seeing an acceptance within the public safety community to the realities of what's happening, or are you still seeing some resistance of denial, shall we say?
You know, pre-9/11, again, I go back. Pre-9/11, that was when everything changed. Before 9/11, I call them, you know, silos of departments. You know, I have my department, you have your department. You're maybe the department next door, the city next door. They work together, but, you know, not really. Since 9/11, I think all that has changed. And I think that you're seeing even now with the recession of 2008, things are changing again. I really do think that public safety, fire chiefs, police chiefs, they get it. They've got to work together now. And big changes in how departments talk to each other, how they interact. You know, they're all pulling out of one pot of money out of their cities, and I just think it's for the better. I see police chiefs and fire chiefs talking together, working together, really getting the job done that maybe they didn't do 10, 15 years ago.
So you feel that the competition for budget for funding is now being overshadowed by the job that needs to get done, and it's not because before 9/11 it seemed that it was all about who got the funds, and that's where the competitive aspect of it came from, and it was not healthy. It sounds like you're seeing a little better situation now.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, I hate to paint everything with a broad brush, but, you know, before 9/11, you know, it was me against you. My budget is more important than your budget. The departments didn't communicate. That changed at 9/11 and has really changed another order of magnitude, I think, since 2008. I see police and fire departments within the cities really coming together now. And like I say, we write business plans, strategic plans, and I don't think I've written a plan in a number of years that included just a single fire department or just a single police department. Almost all of them are merged into one budget and saying, okay, how are we going to split this pie?
Well, we're visiting today with Bill Booth, a consultant with Interact Business Group, providing training consulting throughout the United States, as well as a pretty well-known guest speaker at many symposiums, including the ICMA conference in Boston, Massachusetts.
ICMA
this year.
What is the...
We'll come back, and we're going to talk about ICMA. Okay. On Community Alert with Ted Adams, Mike Williams, sponsored by the California Fire Safe Council. Not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster on KZSB AM 1290, your Santa Barbara News Press Radio, live on the Internet at newspress.com. We'll be right back.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. And today we're visiting with Bill Booth, who's the president of Interact Business Group, a consulting group that works mainly with training programs and public safety agencies. So, Mike.
Well, the International City and County Managers Association, better known as ICMA, is the association that all the city managers and county administrators and potentates that run governments belong to. This is a big organization. They're recognized throughout the world, and they put out a lot of publications that are used in colleges and universities and academies and training throughout the world. And, Bill, you were part of the symposium on the future of local government police services on September 20th of this year. Your topic, consolidation, partnerships, and cost reductions. Think like a businessman. What was your topic about, and how well was it received?
You know, it was back in Boston, which, you know, Boston in September is always a very nice place to be. The colors were just starting to change. It was a beautiful, beautiful time to be in Boston. And the ICMA, as you said, is a real top-level, first-class organization. And I was fortunate enough to be on the panel of a roundtable discussion, all with public safety in mind, with the city, county managers. Some police chiefs were in the room, fire chiefs were in the room, and our roundtable talked about training facilities, training centers, and where are they headed, what's the direction of them. And I spoke to what I see as the trend going forward, which is the consolidation of training centers, where, as we said in the first segment, pre-9/11, you built a fire training center, and it was a fire training center. You built a police training center, it was a police training center. Completely changed now, I think. Almost everything that we see out there is being consolidated. You're merging police and fire together into one location. Partnerships with other agencies, neighboring communities, all those things that, you know, gosh, you mean they weren't doing that before? Well, you know, not really. Now, in this age of the economy climate that it is, good news. People are working together. People are partnering. People are consolidating. And that's kind of what the talk was about, with the overriding tagline, as it were, was you have to think like a businessman in this world of government and governance now and in public safety.
Well, it's an interesting conversation to have with different groups of people, because government is not business, and yet there's components of government that very definitely is business. You have the harbors, for example, and the parks, which have services that they charge for. The fire department provides EMS and ambulance transportation in some jurisdictions, and that's certainly a business component. How do you separate the two? Because there's an obvious financial conflict with the way government works versus the way business works. How do you fuse the two mindsets?
Yeah. You know, I think in this case, when I use the word business, I mean, there is a difference, obviously. If you're running a dry cleaners at a mall, that is a business. And it's different than if you're running a fire department or a police department. But in the loose terminology of business, you know, public safety and public governance is a business. You have a customer that you've got to keep very happy. And in this case, the customer is the taxpayer. You know, the fire department and the police department, they've got to give you good service, just like the dry cleaners. You know, you've got to say, good morning, how are you, how can I help you, I hope you're happy with my product. In the world of public safety and government, it's the same thing. You have taxpayers. They, you know, they're demanding and they want good service. And so to me, as a strategic planner, what is the difference? I don't think there is. You have customers. You're putting out a product, which is your response time, keeping the citizens safe. That is the product that you're providing. And your customer, you got to keep happy, which is the taxpayers that are paying your salary. So I use the terms business with government really in the same context that I would use it if I were running a dry cleaners.
Well, what are the criticisms that you see in various surveys and studies and in talking to the public as a whole is the appearance of the lack of accountability or credibility on some of these projects and what things mm-hmm. truly cost. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a two-edged, if not four-edged topic, because the lack of communication and explaining why you need to do something doesn't necessarily mean that you don't need to be doing it. And on the flip side, do you need to be doing it with such a high degree of cost versus other ways of doing it? How do you propose on folks best handling those kinds of challenges?
You know, I think you have to do it through proper strategic planning. You know, it's the words that I live by, and it's what we do every day. You've got to sit down and say, okay, we need to go spend this money. And when we write a business plan, my first question is why? Why do you better justify it? Because just because I need money to build, let's say, a new fire station, I need money to buy a new fire truck, I need money to build a new a training center, my first question as your strategic planner is why? Justify it to me. And justify your expenditure, because there's a lot of needs in the city for that same dollar, and you're competing against other city departments, and you know it's a competition, and you've got to have your what's that saying? Dots. What is that?
Cross the T, dot the I.
Cross the T's, dot the I's. You got to, you know, it's not like the good old days, you know, back, I'd say, pre-9/11. Well, you know, we're the police department. Of course we've got to have good equipment. We're the fire department. Of course we need to have that new fire truck. You know?
Well, one of the things I see, because agencies are reluctant for open discussion is because they come under fire, they get a lot of criticism, there's a lot of people that feel different ways about it. The discussion drags on, and they end up not being able to get the job really done in the time frame that they need, simply because the public has all of these caveats that they want to put on this expenditure. How do you deal with that? I'd like to hear you just address that a little bit.
You know, at our company, we proudly wear the title, you know, of bean counters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you gotta justify that expenditure. If you're going to go out and buy that new fire truck, man, you better explain it to me, because you're going to have to explain it eventually to your finance department, and then at the end of the day, explain it to the taxpayer. So let's build this case. Why do you need to make this expenditure, and what's the justification for it? And if you can't justify it, you know. Good luck.
Well,
and the justification cannot be, well, just because we got to keep the people safe.
I should preface, because I can answer Ted's question from a personal experience, and that is, I should point out that it's Bill Booth that coined the phrase, who's going to pay, that we use on this show almost every single show. But I first met Bill back in 2005. We had a meeting at the San Diego Convention Center. And I gave this long, grandiose presentation with our staff to Bill about what we wanted to do and why we wanted to do it and or what have you. And we had documentation, and we were trying to impress Bill and his associate on why he should be our consultant and help us with our business plan. And everything went fine for about the first 45 minutes or so, and then Bill stopped us and says, fine, I understand it. I've got it. This is perfectly clear to me. I only have one question. Who's going to pay?
Mm-hmm.
And that was like an arrow through the heart, because we had not approached the issue from that perspective. Mm-hmm. We were approaching it from the how do we raise the money to go do what we want to do. We didn't take it from the direct on approach to who's going to pay, which then opens up all kinds of other questions. And I'm sure you remember that event, because that set a lot of things in motion, Bill.
Oh yeah, I remember it well, Mike. that was a good day, and you know it comes, you know. I deal with policemen and firefighters every single day. In fact, I had a meeting with them this morning. I'm having more meetings this afternoon with the department. And, you know, you got to justify it. Who's going to pay? Who's going to pay, and why am I going to pay it? I pay my taxes like everybody else does in this country, and by golly, I want to make sure I'm getting my money's worth.
Well, you need to make people feel good about paying for services rather than being reluctant to, and I think that's a difficult job often.
And if you can explain to people why you need to build a new training center, people get it. I mean, the public, the taxpayers, they get it. They understand being a firefighter is a very, very dangerous job. One problem, you know, most likely they wouldn't do, and they get it. But but please, just help me understand why you need what you need. And the citizens understand, and they'll pay for it. They just need to be told that it's a good use of their money.
Absolutely. Well, with that, we're up to our next break, and I want to take a moment to thank Forest Supervisor Peggy Hernandez for a very nice letter to Ted and I and to KZSB for Community Alert. We very much appreciate it. That just came in today, in fact. Community Alert, sponsored by the California Fire Safe Council, talking today with Bill Booth with Interact Business Group. Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Richard Dugan working the board for us on Community Alert, Not If But When, Positive Preparation for Disaster, live on the Internet at newspress.com on KZSB AM 1290.
Folks, welcome back to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams, and today we're visiting with Bill Booth, president of Interact Business Group, a consulting group that deals with safety with police agencies, fire departments, training, etc. And Mike,
well, we have a caller, Phil. Welcome to Community Alert. Your question for Bill?
Few quick points. I won't question. Roll this out. Lack of organization and planning on your part does not constitute an emergency on my part. Hey. Okay, the military experience, you know, when I was hired December 81, the majority of new hires and existing employees where I work at the El Estero Wastewater Treatment Plant had been through the military experience. They were vets, Vietnam era. And thinking back, you look at World War II vets, post-World War II, CBs, combat engineers, and the traditional employment path was either public safety, police and fire, and or public works. And you're, to some degree, you're seeing that the new generation Afghan and Iraqi vets moving into the police and fire, but in this area I do not see many in the public works department. So it, you know, that military experience is invaluable. You know, it certainly helped me out, and you're just not seeing it to the degree you did it with prior generations. So you take care.
Well, very good. Right, thank you, Phil. Well, you know, Phil brings up another interesting point. Police, fire, and public works are not the only ones benefiting from military training. So are the gangs. Mm. It is amazing the number of veterans that are coming back that are actually gang members. Mm. And that's creating some interesting problems. I don't know if, Bill, you've seen this yet in the training component of the projects you've been working on, but the skill level of people on the street today is significantly higher than it was when we were kids.
You know, Mike, I can't really speak specifically to the gang issue. I don't know anything about it. I understand what you're saying. I can't comment on it. I don't know anything about it. But I do know that traveling around the country, seeing these new recruits that are being hired for police and fire jobs, my golly, I mean, the quality of people that are being hired now, in my opinion, based on what I've seen, is unbelievable. To have a bachelor's degree now is not unusual. Master's degree, military vet, maybe coming back with a multi-years in service. These men and women coming into law enforcement and the fire service now. I'm telling you, I feel real good about it because, man, these are top-notch quality people that have got unbelievable training. Based on what I see.
You're absolutely correct, and it's my belief that that's going to be driving the change more than anything else, because these people are going to demand it, they're going to be expecting it, and they're going to be wondering why they're coming from a world that's so far ahead of where they've been now, got a job.
Well, you know, Bill, this is an awkward question, and I'm kind of torn for asking it, but what we're seeing in the news to a tremendous extent, especially with law enforcement, that people are getting killed by law enforcement folks that don't deserve to die. I mean, the kid carrying a BB rifle or the guy that pulls a cell phone out at the wrong time, and yet, isn't that training kind of responsible for that? And are we training too much, getting people to be aware of the problem of deadly force on both directions? And I'd like to hear you speak to that a little bit.
You know, I don't know. I haven't seen the statistics. Are there more law enforcement-related shootings now than 10, 15 years ago? I don't know. Are they going up, or is there more publicity? Mm-hmm. I don't know the answer. Is it on, you know, we are on a 24/7, and my golly, If there were 25 hours in the day, the media would have a way of filling it with news.
And of course, everyone's carrying a video camera and a photo.
So I don't know. Are the numbers up over previous years, or is it just making more news? I can't answer that. And I think I think your question maybe is leading towards because we have veterans coming back. Are they more gun happy? Is that what?
The thing is that I get from the public that I deal with, I'm asked a question often, or that somebody comes up, you know, saying, "Well, you know, what's going on with our law enforcement?" I mean, because this is in the news all the time, and I think it's a good point that the news coverage is much broader now than it has been, and so. But it's just a point of curiosity.
Well, that's something I'll look up, because the FBI keeps those kinds of statistics, mm-hmm. and my instincts tell me they're probably not more. It's just that it's the news feeds being what they are, it's just out there easier.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody with a cell phone camera can put something on the news. Most shootings are not in the news, and so I'm thinking they're not up, mm-hmm. but. I think what the issue is that how are we training people today for the kind of confrontations that folks are finding themselves getting into? Suicide by cop is a huge, huge problem, and that's what a lot of these turn out to be.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them. And the police departments are not in a position where they can get up and advocate their view on these kinds of things. So it's a very touchy type of thing. You've also got families. You've got litigation. The issues of these things go on for 5, 8, 10 years, so you can't really comment on them as much as you may want. To
mm-hmm.
I've been involved in enough situations that could have been shootings that weren't. I was involved in situations that shootings that could have maybe not been.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have that kind of decision. I don't have a panel of experts. I don't have reference materials. I can't play the scenario out. I don't have a computer that can play various strategies for me. I got 1 or 2 seconds to make a decision. So most of it falls back onto your training, muscle memory, and instinct, mm-hmm. and the environment that you find yourself at the time. And there's the flip side of the issue, and that is the amount of pressure and criticism that goes on within the public safety community, not with just with self-defense issues, but there's plenty of other examples where if you don't take action in the correct amount of time, then you're criticized for not having taken action.
Well, you're going to be criticized no matter what.
Exactly.
You do,
so you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't in a lot of these situations. And so it's easy for folks to sit on the sidelines and take a clip out of a news article or something said on the news or a blog or whatever and run with it. And in the confines of that one little statement, perhaps the argument's true. But try walking around in South Central Los Angeles on a Saturday night at 2:30 in the mm-hmm. morning and see what you would do.
Well, a lot of these incidents occur in areas that are fairly benign,
sure.
like Santa Barbara, et cetera. You know,
but Santa Barbara, I mean, folks need to start waking up what's going on in this town. I mean, virtually every day you open up the paper and there's a stabbing. That's just what's being reported. You can only imagine what's going out. So this get back into the issue of training. I see training as being, it's much more dimensional now than it used to be.
So, Bill, how do you feel about this? I mean, you got any?
You know, I'm at a law enforcement or fire training center somewhere in the country almost every week. And I can tell you that the technologies that are out there the men and women are training with are just phenomenal. And it's a little bit of you know, what we're seeing from the military training is now trickling down into the public safety. A lot of simulation technologies, a lot of computer technologies, a computer animation, computer simulation with training. A lot of that is happening now, and I would suggest that, you know, if a citizen has a real concern about the police department, you know, go to the police chief and say, hey, tell me how you're training. Mm-hmm. What are you doing? Tell me how you train your people. And I think that the chief would probably welcome that come on in, let me show you what we're doing. And I think you'll find the quality of training, my gosh, since I've seen in the last 10 years, it's just phenomenal.
I would go that a step further. Both Santa Barbara City and Santa Barbara County Fire Police Department and the Sheriff's Department have Citizens Academies.
Yep.
They both sponsor ride-along programs. I suggest people do both.
Yes.
I think that when you go through and you see how complex the law enforcement component is in our community, it's more than just writing tickets and chasing people down for speeding and DUIs and the stuff you see on TV. That's really just a very small component of it. Go to one of these academies and learn what it's like. Spend some time walking in the jail. Spend some time walking in some of the neighborhoods at night. Spend some time finding out what it's like dealing with large masses of intoxicated people in a combative environment. It will change your perspective on things. Now, that doesn't negate the individual question about potential overreaction, but you can see how overreaction maybe not actually is overreaction. It's just a reaction. Mm-hmm. With that, we're up to our next break. Visiting today with Bill Booth, Interact Business Group, on Community Alert, sponsored by California Fire Safe Council on KZSB AM 1290, your Santa Barbara News Press Radio.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. And today we're visiting with Bill Booth, who's the president of the Interact Business Group, a consulting group working with public safety officials and agencies. Mike.
Well, let's get back to the seven traps. As we talked here at the last segment about shootings as one example, that takes an incredible amount of time and facility and stress training and what have you to work with people to teach them how to handle that. And that's all after the hiring process to weed people out that aren't even physically capable of dealing with it in the first place. So the training centers and the ranges and the environments that they set up for training, for interactive training, which is done, is critical. But there's a lot of traps for those that are trying to put these centers together. And just going through them real quick, trap one, not knowing the preliminary site and the equipment requirements. Two, not knowing how the training facility will be used. Three, losing focus on the training assets and priorities at the facility. Trap four, undermining the cost to build the training facility, or underestimating, I should say, the cost of building the training facility. Failing to establish ongoing annual operating costs or sustainability, failing to establish a clear benefit analysis, that's accountability, and failing to establish a clear roadmap for the project. And I think these seven traps are not unique just to building training centers. I think this is just business and government in general on even a simple project of what are we trying to do? How are we going to pay for it? How are we going to maintain it? How are we going to sustain it? And how are we going to prove that it's of any value? Is that a good assessment, Bill?
I think so, Mike. I do. I think you've done a good job of rounding up some of the things that I have seen over the years. You know, these are mistakes that get made over and over and over again. And I always try to highlight them in our practice with agencies to say, you know, let's learn from mistakes. Let's don't make those mistakes over and over again. If you build a facility, if you build a fire station or a police training center, that's great. You built it; it's beautiful. Oh gosh, how am I going to maintain it? You know, the roof leaks. The water bill needs to be paid. The electric bill needs to be paid. How are you going to maintain it? Don't overlook how are you going to maintain and operate the facility. You know, so let's, as one of the traps lists there, what is the operating cost? Once you build it, you still got to maintain it. Don't forget that.
And well,
these are things, and these police and fire facilities, I mean, they're very expensive. There's a lot of uniqueness that goes into them. We're not building a tract of homes, you know, where you got model A, B, C. You go down, you got model A, B, C, and you start over. Model A, B, C, A, B, C. You're making these things over and over again. Police and fire facilities are very unique unto themselves. And proper strategic planning and avoiding these mistakes, as I like to say, let's don't make a million-dollar mistake.
Well, we have a beautiful facility just finishing up here in Lompoc, Santa Maria area with Lompoc, Allen Hancock College, and that has been a long time coming. And that's a police, fire, EMS and training environment where everything kind of co-mingles because there's a lot of similarities in how fire responds to shooting scenarios and that kind of thing. And there's things where the cops have to learn how the fire department does their deal. And there's a track and there's all kinds of classrooms and simulated ranges. It's a beautiful facility. But it didn't happen overnight. And in turn, the issue of building it is one. The issue of staffing it is another.
Incompetent staffing. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, building it, you know, I wrote an article a while back, and I can add it to the show notes. I wrote an article called The Two Colors of Money. There is the color of money to build something, and then the other color is to maintain it. And, you know, and over the years, I got to tell you, sometimes getting money to approve a new construction is easier than getting money to approve the ongoing operations cost. To build something is a one-time line item. You put it in the construction budget. You build it. You know, there it is, one line item, new fire training center, done. Oh, my gosh, you mean you got to come back now, and now you need $250,000 a year to keep the lights on? Ooh, that's a tough thing to do. And so in The Two Colors of Money, I talk about that. I don't know over the years which is harder to get approved, getting it constructed or getting it operated.
Well, we find, you know, in a lot of other areas that this maintenance situation is difficult, because when you have a new project, of course, there's a lot of shine that goes with that. The politicians love it, the funders love it, the recipients love it. But then after it's completed, the maintenance aspect is not as shiny, you know, and it's more difficult to raise funds.
Well, it's also costly, because it translates to having to hire people.
Right.
And there's no way you can automate some of the maintenance requirements.
You
and
can't
what have
build
you.
That into your building.
No.
Yeah.
And with public safety, you've got union agreements and people with specific tasks, and it gets very, very complicated. And because a lot of the training centers, at least in California, are based within the community college system, you have that whole world to contend with, which is a different animal than the public safety world. And that must make for some challenging meetings for you, Bill.
Oh, boy. I, you know what? I got to tell you, I was in one this morning. I mean, this was the exact topic. You know, how in the heck are we going to staff this thing? How many hours is it going to be open? Well, you know, police and fire is a 24/7 business. Are we going to staff this training center 24/7? How are we going to pay for this thing? Believe me, I mean, operations and maintenance of public safety facilities is a huge issue. That line item in the budget never goes away.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other problem that I see from a bit of an outsider is that these buildings have limited use outside of their structural design.
Right.
I can't use a racetrack at Allen Hancock for anything other than what it is. In course, the maintenance of that, or the classrooms, or the shooting range, or what have you, these are all expensive components of the training center. They're not just classrooms. How do I show the true value of that that's palatable to anybody that's doing number crunching? And so some things, you're just going to have to make some exceptions to the fact that you can't financially justify it in conventional means.
Right.
And how to do that is where Bill comes in.
You're right. You're right. And, you know, that is one of the very first things we do is, you know, we've got to sit down and we do what we call a detailed needs assessment. Tell me all of the training that you're required to do. By law, by mandate, I am required to do this. There are certain things that in order for an officer to stay certified in any state, there is a certain list of training he or she must do. Okay, what's the minimum, and what kind of facility do I need and to carry out that training? That's the bare minimum. And you got to have it. You can't get around it. It's the way it is.
So, Bill, real quick, how are we seeing the Internet and creating Internet education affecting these training centers? I mean, it seems to me that there's a great deal of education that can happen with video and with questions, with testing, et cetera, online. Is that helping or is it hindering? How's that working?
Oh, you know what? What a change. What a great, great question. Because, my gosh, just I would say in the last 2 years, I spoke at what's called Fire Department Instructors Conference in Indianapolis 3 years ago now on the technology, the online computer-based training and technology. It is changing everything. We talked earlier in the show about the people from the military rotating into public safety. That's how the military's been training people through computers and simulation, that technology is now coming, boy, like a tidal wave into public safety.
So that'll be changing some of the training installations, the buildings, then.
Very much so. I mean, yeah, things are a lot of training now is taking place. You don't have to go to a classroom. You can do it on your tablet.
Mm-hmm.
You can do it on a computer. Interactive, internet-based, full-motion video. VCR tapes, I think, are a thing of the past,
mm-hmm.
because younger people now, they want the interaction. They want to respond to a question and know that they got the question right or wrong. And technology and education in public safety is at warp speed when it comes to change.
With that, we're up to our next break, visiting with Bill Booth, Interact Business Group, on Community Alert, sponsored by the California Fire Safe Council, on californiasnewspress.com and KZSB AM 1290.
Folks, welcome to the last segment of the show. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. Today we're visiting with Bill Booth, the president of Interact Business Group, consulting group that works with education within the agency's emergency services programs.
Yes. Well, Bill, how do people get a hold of you if they're interested in further information, and how do they get your newsletter?
Sure. Well, the company website is, it's a long one, three words, www.interactbusinessgroup.com. You'll go there and you'll see a little bit about the company, the services we offer, but also I write articles every month all about public safety and basically my observations around the country, my thoughts and what I see happening across the country. I write about it. I do have a blog on the site you can log into and follow what I write. I basically try to write what I see. Some of the stuff we've already talked about today, the article that I wrote on the different colors of money. Recently I wrote on revenue ideas for public safety, merging and partnerships between different agencies, how to make those partnerships work. About 2 weeks ago, we were very fortunate to have a training center that we wrote the business plan for get funded by Bond down in Texas. We showed where that department would save $300,000 a year in training by developing and creating their own training center. That case study is on the website. So it's www.interactbusinessgroup.com. A lot of ways to follow us. Articles. The newsletter comes out every month. We really summarize what's going on in the world of public safety every month in a newsletter. In fact, the November issue is coming out tomorrow, and it's a nice little snapshot of what's going on in the world of public safety for a lot of people that just don't have time to read about it every day. We kind of capsulize it and summarize it every month.
Well, interestingly, you don't come from public safety. You come from the business world, correct?
You know what? I do, and that's, you know what, when I go into a police department or fire department, the very first thing I say is, I'm not a cop, and I'm not a fireman. I'm not brave enough to do the job that they do, but you know what? I understand strategies. I understand spreadsheets, and I'm a bean counter, and I know how to justify cost and think strategically, and I never, ever cross the line to make people think that I'm brave enough to do the job that those folks do, because I'm not brave enough. These guys and girls are unbelievable. So that's my background. I'm a business guy.
So the website again is theinteractgroup.com, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Interact, and your phone number is 760-651-2259.
We're headquartered down in San Diego.
Yeah, but you, like me, are everywhere in the country. I've run into you in all kinds of remote places. So, again, this is Bill Booth. Great article regarding consolidation, partnership, and cost reductions. Think like a businessman, presented at the International City and County Managers Association back on September 20th in Boston, Massachusetts. That information also available on the Internet on a simple Google search. Bill, thank you very much for taking time out to be with us today. We understand
Bill,
you're up in Paso
show.
Robles in the middle of a conference right now. Yes. Thank you very much for taking time to be with us.
Mike, thank you very much. Ted, I appreciate it. Anytime.
Outstanding.
Okay. Take care, Bill.
Take care. Bye.
And with that, any closing thoughts, Ted, before we go?
No. I'm anticipating a nice lunch at Arts and Letters Cafe.
Arts and Letters. I'm sure Lisa's pulling the chairs out for us right now.
Yeah.
Again, Christmas Major, The Fire Horse That Saved Christmas, a great book, a great opportunity to share an interesting story and a lot of old history about the fire service going all the way back to the 1800s.
Cool.
Ted Adams, Mike Williams at the end of the show. Richard Dugan working the board. Community Alert, sponsored by the California Fire Safe Council. Not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster on KTSB AM 1290. Live on the Internet at newspress.com. The news is next. See you next week.
This has been Community Alert, not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster with Ted Adams and Mike Williams. Community Alert is produced by the Wildland Residents Association, San Marcos Pass Volunteer Fire Department, and sponsored by the California Fire Safe Council. Technical support for Community Alert provided by Richard Dugan and Jim Williams. Community Alert, not if, but when. On KZSB AM 1290, your News Press radio station.